It's time for Dr. Lisa Gives a Shit. How you doing? I'm Dr. Lisa. Thanks for listening. Thanks for tuning in to Radio Free Brooklyn today. Today and the whole day, you got to stay with us, man. We're having like this big party in the studio all day long. So just hang out with us. We're going to have fun because we're a bunch of fucking crazy maniacs. Anyway, thanks. Go to our homepage, www.radiofreebrooklyn.com, and, throw us a few bucks, if you're thinking about it. If you're thinking, like, should I get the extra tomatoes? No, save the money and give it to us. Anyway, we all need help these days, financial help, right? And we are no different. So today is National Working Woman's Day or Women's History Day or something like that. I was thinking about that today. You know what my hope, this is my goal. So let's give a shout out to every working woman. And that includes every woman because every woman just fucking picks up after all of you guys. And you know it. Like the idea that homemakers are not working women is so wrong. Anyway, so show some love and appreciation to the any women you see today because they all work. They're all working. And my hope for the future is that we can get rid of Working Women's Day and women's art shows and women's bullshit, this woman's bullshit, that. It's like we're racial things. It's black this, white this, cream colored that. We're all people. And when we start to, the day that we get rid of these fucking labels, I will be way long gone. I know that, but that's my fantasy goal. Maybe in my 89th year, if I make it. I'm in really good health. I had a great checkup yesterday. I'm going to be 62. That's right. I look good for my age. They say so. They tell me, I'm going to be 62 in May. And, I got my cholesterol was a little bit high and I got it like down a lot by, I don't even know how I did that. So I'm in a good mood today. I saw my doctor yesterday. My doctor's is really good looking woman. So I always look at her and think, God, I wish she looks good. She has no problems. Anyway, back to business. Let's get down to this. So I've got this really awesome guy who I don't know that well, but I really, really wanted to get to know him. And that's part of the reason he's on the show today. And his name is Edward Kitch, known to me as Eddie. Hi, Eddie.
Hello. Hello. It's actually Kish.
Kish? Mm-hmm. I said Kish. Oh. K-I-S-H.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Did you think I said Kitch?
I thought I heard you say Kitch.
Oh, okay. No. That's a whole other thing. I would never call you Kitch. That's terrible. especially from somebody that knows anything about art. That's almost a, I don't know. Is that derogatory? I don't know. We got to get an art expert on here.
You can call me Eddie, please.
Eddie. So how I know Eddie is the partner of one of our very special favorite, incredibly talented hosts, Ori Givens IV. Ori Givens is the host of Queer State of Mind, which plays on Sundays, noon to 2. Or is it noon
Saturday.
To
Saturday? Saturdays, noon to 2.
We went back and forth on this a few times, Eddie. I said, is it Saturday, Sunday?
It's because he's also involved with
Objection to the Rule. Yes,
thank you.
And that's on when?
That's on Sundays at 1 o'clock.
Okay, so let's just be clear. Ori Givens, Queer State of Mind, Saturdays, noon to 2.
Mm-hmm.
And he's been on the show. You can look, if you go back into the archives, you can hear him on my show too, where we talked a lot about, I learned a lot about intersectionality and, all that stuff, politics with gay people. So I wanted Eddie to just explain Ori's show in a nutshell for us.
Well, it's 2 hours of music and news and gossip from a QPOC perspective.
A QP?
That is a queer people of color perspective.
Oh, there you go.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah. Q QP. See, I'm learning here.
QPOC.
Too. Okay, we'll all learn that together, folks. I should know that. Anyway, I am a huge Ori fan, and I have enormous, enormous respect for this guy. I think he's like brilliant and so capable, and he just got this really awesome job. How do you describe the job?
He is an on-air reporter for a news organization, a television news organization in Hudson Valley.
And he's killing it. We're really proud of him, right?
He is definitely killing it, and we're definitely proud of him.
And one of the things is that Ori and Eddie have lived together for how long?
We're not living together at the moment, but we do see each other fairly frequently, but we had been living together for about 2 years before he accepted the job.
Mm-hmm. And how long were you dating before that? How long have you been dating?
I think total now we're 3 years going on four, if I'm mm-hmm. not mistaken, unless I'm adding years to it now. I think that's correct. I think it is almost 4 years. Yeah.
So I had the good fortune of running into Eddie last Thursday at our Radio Free Brooklyn music showcase at the Well, and I had this opportunity to invite him on the show. How was the show? That was great, right?
It was a great show. I was getting a little late for me. I didn't get to see all of it, but I enjoyed what I saw. I thought it was impressive. I was disappointed we didn't have more folks there.
I heard it did get crowded. I'm old. I was there early. I was there early with the guy who'd been on that day, Thurston. But Thurston Ray, who was awesome, and he played really, really well.
Yes,
but, anyway, this is what I think we're going to talk about. Mm-hmm. We're going to first talk about a little bit about you and Ori, mm-hmm. your relationship.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And then we're going to talk about you coming out a little bit.
All right.
And then we're going to talk about an issue that you said you have, which is shirking responsibility. We're going to see if we can help you with that. Mm-hmm. So first of all, how did you and Ori meet?
We were both at the time living in Columbus, but we had, our paths had crossed multiple times before then, unbeknownst to us. It wasn't until we actually met and started to compare notes that we said, you know this person, I know that person. And
mm-hmm. What did you have in common?
We both lived in Akron. I lived in Akron for 14 years. He lived in Akron for 3 out of those 14 years. Never met, which is amazing because I know everyone in Akron, and it's a tiny town. Mm-hmm. And it came to pass, of course, that we know people that, you know, mutually, mm-hmm. that before, you know, without mm-hmm. meeting each other.
Mm-hmm.
So there was that, but then we had actually met in person. We met online, actually, when we were both living in Columbus, and mm-hmm. met in person. You know, we met at a tea house that sadly is mm-hmm. no longer in business in Columbus.
Mm-hmm.
And so we enjoyed some tea and biscuits, and just kind of had a very quiet time of conversing and getting to know each other. And we had a kind of a proper courtship for a couple weeks, where we just would meet frequently.
You dated?
Yes,
you dated.
Actually dated.
You met somebody online that you are now both in love.
Oh, very much so. Very much so.
I love that. You know, this is really funny because I was having this drunken conversation with you on last Thursday, and I wanted to continue it on air. That I the thing about you, Eddie, as I told you, that like I keep... when I saw you, I'm like, I know that person, but I didn't put you together with Ori immediately because I keep forgetting that you're gay. Like the thing about you, Eddie, and mm-hmm. you acknowledge that you know this, mm-hmm. is that you seem like a Jew. You seem like just a Jew guy that would have gone to my high school.
Not suburban.
Well, maybe originally. I'm suburban originally.
Like Long Island suburban.
Yeah, maybe, but you just seem like such a regular old Jew that I wouldn't, you know, known in my high school. And like not gay at all. You seem so not gay.
It really doesn't help that I say oi frequently, but I mean, it's one of those things that, you know, you pick up from friends that are Jewish and, you know, it's, you carry it through.
So we're finding out for sure that you're not gay. I mean, that you're gay, but you're not Jewish.
I'm not straight, but I'm not Jewish.
You're not.
So
you're a gay goy.
I'm a gay goy, indeed.
Yeah.
Indeed.
So, and then we were talking about how I called that out, but not everybody. But so what's that like for you? You know that's true about you, that people don't really like tag you as gay. So what, how's that affect your life?
So it's a precarious kind of thing because, you know, I try to exist as myself as much as possible. I try to be my true self every day. And, you know, I've been accused
admirable.
Of being fake. I've been accused of, oh, well, you're putting this on, you're putting on.
Oh, you're not really gay.
I'm like, well, no, talk to me long enough and you'll figure it out by context of conversation. But, you know, you won't hear much of a lisp because I went through speech pathology for 5 years. I mean, my parents,
really?
Yeah, no, I had actually quite a lisp from until I was about 13. All my S's were like this. They all
said
like this.
Oh, so your parents wanted to help. But that wasn't
right.
like a
so
gay
conversion. It wasn't like gay conversion. I mean, no. We went to a speech
right.
pathologist who taught me how to like close my teeth when I say my S's.
That's probably good. You sound more authoritative, I guess, or it's better. That's probably better in life. But so does it ever hurt your feelings, or do you ever think like this is great? They'll never know I'm gay, or what is it like for you?
You know, and it's definitely easy to walk through the straight. You know, walking, you know, to the straight cis situation as, you know, cisgendered men and be able to have conversations with them.
Have
and,
the power.
You know, not is everything changes the moment that I find that people find out that I'm gay and they're cisgender men. Everything changes.
What happens?
Sometimes, and not always, I shouldn't say always, but when this does happen, they treat me differently. Some people will shirk away from me. They're you know, all suddenly averse to physical touch, like they don't, you know.
That's but, so weird.
But then some people will overcompensate by, you know, making everything out about me being gay, and it's like, oh, God, no, this is really no. We don't have to talk about me and butt sex every time you see me, just because it's like, hey, this guy's gay, so he's gonna be cool with this joke. No, maybe not.
Oh man! So when the situation comes up and there's a reason for people to know whether you're gay or straight, does that make you uncomfortable? Are you like, oh my God, here it's coming?
You know, if it's somebody that is, you know, utterly bigoted, then yeah, it's like, oh God, you know, it's like Archie Bunker finding out, oh jeez, yeah, but you know, look at the beard though. Yeah, you sure you're not? Yeah, maybe. So, but like, by and large, most people, especially in New York City.
Yeah, New York City is probably cool.
It's in Ohio. It's when I go back home to Ohio, more or less, that it's just like, people are always freaked out. Although, actually, when I visited Orion Hudson Valley, we went to a safe space for gay people, and not necessarily a gay bar, but we actually were calling it a speakeasy. But met a young bisexual man there who had pointed out to me that I didn't put off any quote unquote gay vibes at all. He had no idea, and I'm just like, okay. But he just remained fascinated by this, and I'm like, okay, well, we can get over this
because
I am. It is true, Houston. We have confirmation. He is gay. It's true.
That is so weird. Isn't it weird that like we what's so weird? And this is me too. Is that it? Just what you're pointing out, or what you illuminate by by existing, mm-hmm. is the fact that we all have these stereotypes of what gay men are like.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, I find that unfortunate.
I find
too,
that ridiculous.
Because it's, you know, it's just like. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, shouldn't when people ask me for fashion tips, and it's just like I don't know fashion. I know what I like.
No, you don't. Ori does.
Yeah, Ori does, but Ori also refuses to dress me. I'm like,
good.
Just dress me. He's like, no, dress yourself. I'm like, okay, all right.
Why? Fine. He wants you to be you.
He wants me to be me. Exactly. He
cool.
Just like, he doesn't want me to be his Barbie girl.
I love that. He's so good. He's so much better than I am.
Right?
I'm like,
no,
Bill,
you'd have been like, oh, I can't wait to get my hands on you. Yeah,
Bill. Everybody's like, oh, he is such a, I was like, yeah, he was a great fixer-upper. But I love that. So also, can we just say, I mean, this is ridiculous, but Ori's black, right?
Yes. Yes, Ori is black.
Ori's black.
Ori is black.
So does that ever, there must be, there's a comedy routine in here somewhere where the two of you go out together and Ori's like, you know, we're really well dressed, or usually, yeah, he's a stylish happening. He's a handsome, stylish black man, right? We could say that,
oh,
right?
Yes. We're his
favorite. And you're like a schlubby, a schlubby Jew.
A schlubby Jew. So, yeah, so I wear a lot of plaid.
You wear a lot of plaid. You look like a hipster. You look like a geeky hipster, like a little too smart to be a real hipster.
Right.
And a little too uncool, too geeky.
Okay.
Yeah, you're my kind of guy. Okay, that, you know, you're totally my kind of guy. So let's, so does that, like, does, what happens there? Do people, like, think, what, do people get really confused by that? Or what happens there? Do people notice? Or?
Well, you know, so far, you know, as far as, you know, adventures in Hudson Valley here concerned, you know, we've fared quite well. I mean, we've gone to dinner places. No one stared at you. Whispering. And it's been kind of nice. You know, that's in a small town. I mean, you can't expect that, but it's a small town in the state of New York. So, you know, there's still, you know, people are still a little bit more forward thinking than they are back home. But even still, you know, I don't.
So have you guys gone to Ohio together?
Oh, yes, many times. Well, and that's where we met. That's where we, you know,
right, right. So what was that like then?
You know, I can't recall any specific situation where, you know, it was like,
you know, nothing horrible happened.
Horrible happened.
You weren't kicked out of a public place or anything like that.
No, actually, no, we've never been kicked out.
Nothing like that. No, we're better about that now, aren't
Certainly.
We? That's good to hear.
Certainly. I think, you know, if it had been 20 years ago, it might have been a lot more difficult.
Yeah. Well, my best friend is still my best friend, but when we were in she was in her 20s. I was in my early 30s. She had a long-term relationship with a black guy. Mm-hmm. And I used to hear a lot of stories back in those days. So, like, it was really hard for them to leave New York City without getting all sorts of weird attention, right? That makes sense to you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
so
no,
I guess things have improved.
Definitely. I think so.
What about, like, holding hands and stuff, though? Like, do you do... So, most gay men... feel like you don't see that a lot. Mm-hmm. Is that most gay men or you guys or what's that about?
Well,
like holding hands, putting your arms around each other, that kind of thing.
There's always the possibility that we could hold hands and be in a space where, you know, people want to say something or people want to do something. We have never had a problem like that. You know, we've never had anyone that's ever said, you know, can you please stop doing that?
Like, don't touch him.
But that possibility always exists, and that, you know, and I feel that I'm a calm enough individual, so long as, you know, I'm being approached calmly, that I can, you know, I can appeal to that person's instant
humanity. But don't you feel angry that, like, fuck you, why do you guys, it's such a fucked up planet,
right? No, and I totally agree. I think ultimately, yeah, that does make me angry, but I mean, I'm thinking this day and age, I'm so used to ignorance. I don't know. I mean,
yeah. Can I ask you this?
Can we talk about the election results from, you know, a couple?
So if you were with another gay couple and you were in like one of your homes, would you be holding hands?
Oh, well, most definitely. But we've gone to. I think we have more straight friends than we do gay friends. When it comes to like couples, but. And as far as us visiting with them, but in situations with straight friends, we've sat and held hands before. Cool. And we tend to visit safe spaces, you know, here in New York City. So that,
so sad, you know, safe spaces. Well, but, I guess I feel that way too, because I'm a little bit of a weirdo. I mean, I don't feel comfortable.
There's probably certain bars where you wouldn't hold your husband's hands just because, you know, PDA would probably evoke some drunken comment from somebody.
Maybe, I don't know. But, yeah. Maybe because I wouldn't want to embarrass him, I wouldn't hold his hand. But so let's talk about you coming out as gay. So you were saying that you grew up in a small... Tell us about that.
Okay. So I grew up in a town called Lorraine. It's west of Cleveland. It's kind of in the shadow of Terminal Tower. And it's, you know, it's At one point in its history, was the greatest steel manufacturer in the country, and that, of course, is no longer the case. But
a lot of Ohio.
So when I was younger, and that's so the point of this is that when I was younger, it was a much bigger town than mm-hmm. it is now. It's mm-hmm. it's really gotten small. The steel mill has shut mm-hmm. down a lot of its operations. It's
sad, depressing
there,
place.
Yeah, it's really. I miss the town that doesn't exist anymore.
Right. So you grew up, but when you were growing up, was it a pretty small town?
Mm-hmm. It was still, I mean, a lot of people, it was one of those towns where a lot of people were nosy. Everybody already kind of knew your business anyway.
Mm-hmm, and you were aware of being gay since you were what, like 12 or?
13. I was 13 when it first kind of like hit me. And I spent 3 years mulling it over and not telling a soul until I finally like broke down and had a conversation with a psychological professional.
Unlike myself, a licensed psychological professional. No. So tell us about that.
So I was visiting, my mother actually had a visit with her therapist. I was 16 and I was in the waiting room.
So your mom was going to therapy already and she would bring you like, come here, wait for me, and then we'll go out and get ice cream or something.
Yeah, we're running errands.
Then you have to not cry on your shoulder on the way home.
Oy, well, you know.
Oy, I bet you. You're sure you're not adopted?
I'm not. So,
wait,
but,
I'm going to run a DNA check on you.
Well, my last name is actually, I did some Ellis Island visiting when I was a tourist back, you know.
Don't let me derail you. No, this is not going to happen. Keep going.
Anyway, so. So yeah, so one particular session, the psychiatrist had asked, asked me in the room for the last 5 minutes of my mother's session, and you know they were talking to me about responsibilities and how you know my mom was proud of me that I had stepped up. And
so he asked you to stay.
He asked me to come in and talk.
And
he just
wanted to like give you like you're doing an encouraging that your mom really loves you and is encouraging of you and proud of you. Is that what he wanted you to know?
Basically, yes. But part of the thing is, and I kind of bite my tongue, but the part of the thing is that she was proud of me for how well I was managing things, but she omitted all the other responsibilities that she had placed on me. That you know, that's neither here nor there.
What do you mean? She gave you a lot of responsibility.
I had a lot of things that I had to take care of around
like
the
what?
House. Just day to day, like you know that what you were saying earlier about housewives, you know, about having to do all the chores and everything like that was something.
Well,
that,
let me just ask you: your parents are married.
Oh yes.
And
yes.
So your dad, what did your dad do?
My dad, well, they're both retired now, but at the time, he was an administrator for a school system. So mm-hmm.
he had a decent job. Yeah, and your mom?
My mom was also working. She was a salesperson. So neither of them get home till 6.
And you had a younger sister.
I had a younger sister.
Okay.
So
they both worked hard all day.
They both worked hard.
And you were the oldest kid.
And so I was the oldest kid.
So she wanted you to help out around the house.
And help I did, indeed. And she pulled me in, and it was one of those things where I think during the session it was like, so you know, Julie, so how's everything going around the house? And you know, oh well, this is clean and that's done and this is done, and well, who's doing that? Eddie's doing that. Well, you should probably pull him in here and thank him.
Oh,
for that.
Wow.
And I think that's kind of how that came to pass. So
wow.
You know, so she told me this, and I'm like, oh my god, well thank you, I appreciate that.
Mm-hmm.
I really hadn't. You
know, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Wow.
Gotten that.
So she was in the room too.
Yeah. So she was in the room. And so then when we were done, and I asked him, like, could I have a couple minutes alone? There's something that I just would like to like talk about, if that's okay. And asked, you know, my mom to leave the room if that was all right. And so, you know, she left the room. And so I went to the psychiatrist and I said, I think I'm gay. And, you know, and this is something that I've been dealing with for 3 years. And I got to talk to somebody about it. And he said, well, there's nothing wrong with that. And like, psychologically, like, you're not crazy. Like, that's not what this means. But you have to understand the context of this. Like, this was, 1993?
Mm-hmm.
1994?
Mm-hmm.
It was 1993. Everyone around me was kind of ignorant. Like, people that I went to for help, like, school counselors.
Well, how did you feel when he said that? Was that reassuring or did that?
It was. I walked out of there and I felt empowered. I'm like, I'm not crazy. This is normal. Like, it's okay mm-hmm. that I feel this way.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I needed to hear. And I'm like, I wasn't getting mm-hmm. that from anyone that I was going to. I was, you know, I went to teachers and like, I had one teacher that told me that I was going to burn in hell. And then,
really? So you used teachers as the people to tell?
I went to the teacher. I went to my band director, actually. I went to her. And, you know, I think I was maybe 14 at the time when I went to her with that. So then, I kept it to myself for longer.
That's too bad. So, did you tell your sister? No, I guess she's...
Yeah, I did. I did tell my sister. I probably shouldn't have. I think she might have been too young because she's 3 years younger than me. So
She would have been...
She would have been
13.
She was 13, yeah.
Was she supportive?
In so much that she loved me and she made that a point. But, I mean, and she's still, like, she's not supportive, but she's also not, you know...
She wasn't the person who was going to champion this.
She's nobody's really...
So what happened? How did you come out to your parents, or how did that... evolved?
Well, I didn't really get the opportunity to come out to my parents. It was kind of a double-edged sword. Like, I had I had, you know, after that conversation, I had felt comfortable enough to start coming out to people.
And so, your friends?
My friends. And so coming out I did, and I told one of my friends, who told her mom, who told my mom. And right, and so then it got back to me, and my mom, you know.
So your mom confronted you.
She confronted me. Not only she confronted, she already denied it before she even talked to me. And it's just like, so, like,
how can she deny it? It's not how her. Can
you, right, exactly.
She and said, "I know you're not gay."
Right, and so then it's like, that came up, and then my mom's like, "This is just a phase you're going through. You're going to be fine." And so then it was shoved back in the closet.
Aww.
And so then, you know, I guess this is a little personal, but I had fashioned a toy for myself
that was also
discovered.
Nice.
Yeah. So
good job.
Well, they discovered this toy that I fashioned for myself, and with an adult toy.
Mm-hmm.
And so then the conversation came up again, and you know, both my parents kind of broke down and were just upset and teary eyed, and they personalized it. And looking back at it now,
they personalized it.
It was about them. They made it about them. As an example, like, you know, I was
like, they failed.
No, like, that was their own. Like, my mom was like, you know, well, I had a lesbian affair once when I was 13, and I'm fine now. And like,
oh,
right. And it's just like, it was about, they made it about them. It wasn't about me and what I was dealing with. It just made it about them and how I'll be able to overcome this. And it's like treating it like an affliction. And so I had spent, you know, some more time in the closet after that. But I mean, that isn't to say that I wasn't fooling around with people in high school, because I was kind of a slut in high school.
So really? there were other gay friends?
Gay in so much in the sense that, you know, it's gay for the moment, like most teenagers, like they'll experiment.
Or guys that wanted to experiment.
Right, guys that wanted to experiment. So then that's kind of the experience, you know, that was all about. But, you know, it took me a while to really understand, like, the value of being in a relationship with another man. And even before Ori, and like, I had other relationships before him, and I spent a lot of time looking at my sexuality through a heterosexual lens. Mm-hmm. And really that's the first flaw is using, you know, what your parents lived by as how you should live. And so I've approached my life very differently because of the things that I've learned.
Do you think that's any reason why you might present? I mean, I just have to ask this: why you might present so straight? Because you kind of were internalized what your parents said, or you think it's just a coincidence, or like it's kind of like.
I mean, it's.
I've got blue eyes, or
it's distinctly possible. I mean, a lot of it, I could still be carrying some of that. But I mean, if you put me in a situation where, you know, I'm around other gay men, like, you know, that queen can come out. I can get very flamboyant with the rest of them.
I'm sorry that you went through that. I mean, I'm really like, that's really horrible to hear. And I'm sure it's very common, and or more common than I realize. Often enough, but I'm sorry that you went through that, and I am even more impressed than I was before about what seems to be such a healthy relationship that you have with Ori, who is such a great person to be around. I think the two of you are really, I'm impressed. I gotta say, I'm impressed so much that I want to tell people right now that they're listening to Radio Free Brooklyn.
You are listening to Radio Free Brooklyn.
And And let's give Ori's show another shout out. My show is every Thursday, 2 to 3, rebroadcast Friday mornings, 8 a.m. So you should listen to this. You should go to our homepage. You should donate money to us, RadioFreeBrooklyn.com or RadioFreeBrooklyn.org. But you should also listen to Ori's show. Tell us about Ori's show. Two minutes, two seconds.
It is news, music, and tea for QPOC.
That means queer people of color. People of color, and it's on Saturdays. Queer State of Mind, Saturdays.
Saturday.
12 to 2. Tune in.
And Sundays, I'm blank again.
We're talking about objection to the rule. Sundays 1 to 2. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's okay, or you can pay us later.
Or you can just smack me around later for
Well, if that makes you happy, you guys can just do that. So a lot of this is actually pretty good background for what we wanted to sort of talk about, see if we could make any heads or tails of an issue that you were talking about that I applaud you for even calling out on your own behalf, which is avoiding responsibility.
Yeah,
so that's something we want to talk about here. Now, one thing that occurred to me while we were talking is the conversation that you had in the paid professionals, meeting where your mother gave you a lot of responsibilities mm-hmm. growing up. Let's hear a little mm-hmm. more about that. What that was like.
So, I mean, it's, you know, a lot of it was chores. A lot of it was, you know, cooking and cleaning. Like, I had to make sure the dinner was on the table when they came home. Like,
so that, you had to cook dinner for your whole family of four?
I had to cook dinner for my whole family of four, which wasn't a terrible thing, and it was something that was expected of my mother when she was growing up. So, you know, that made it okay. And I look back on all that now, and it's another one of those, like, that was just kind of part of my upbringing. But at that time, too, and I compared to, like, what my other friends were doing when they came home from school and the things that they were doing, like, no one was worrying about making sure that there was enough Lowry seasoned salt for the chicken. Like, no one was, oh my God, did I put X's in those baked potatoes before I stuck them in the oven? Did I put enough seasoning on the roast? Did I remember to use the bouillon cube? Like, no one had these concerns.
Did your mother teach you how to cook? She had very specific expectations.
My grandmother, actually, we had the convenience of living next door to her. And when my mom first went back to work, when we'd built this house next door to my grandmother, first 6 months, my grandmother cooked the meals. And during that time, I was with her every step of the way, watching how she did it.
So she was training you.
She was training me.
Was that the whole point?
That was the whole point.
And wow.
So, and I mean, it was something where it was just like, Eddie, would you like to cook? Oh my God, I'd love to learn how to cook. Oh yeah. But nobody mentioned the part where I was going to be cooking meals every night. So you were initially
interested in cooking.
Oh, I was. But again, I didn't realize I was signing on to cook.
Who did the shopping?
Four meals a night. My mom did the shopping. She would push the cart, but then, you know, I was with her every step of the way.
So you went to the supermarket with her.
I went to the supermarket with her. So yeah.
Did you have other, that's a lot of responsibility. What about the dishes?
Thankfully we had a dishwasher. Okay. So at least we had that going for us.
But what else? Did you have other responsibilities?
I had to make sure that laundry was taken care of. I did the laundry for the family. Once every couple of weeks, I kind of shared that responsibility with my mom. So it wasn't something I had to do all the time, but it was something mm-hmm. that I helped out with.
Mm-hmm.
But the expectation, day to day vacuuming, dusting, keeping the house in order, like that was part of the, you know.
And thing. Were there consequences? If you didn't do it, or like, what was that like? Were you like, was there a lot of pressure? Did you do it on your own?
It was enough not to listen to my dad bitch to get the shit done. So, I mean, that was really like the reward was not having my dad complain. So that was usually how that worked.
Mm-hmm. So you did most of it. Was your dad a pain? Was your dad a real hard ass?
Not always. He had a short fuse. Mm-hmm. Very short fuse. And so he's a neat freak. The guy is,
he's a neat freak.
Yeah. So my room was always messy because I was just like, this is my space. I have to keep everyone else's space clean. I'm going to keep my room messy.
So your mom sort of pushed off a little bit of that responsibility onto you, yeah. I think, perhaps. Did she?
Yeah, a
did
little bit.
Did you feel like that?
I did. And, when she went back to work, like that was one of the reasons that, I was pulled into that office that day, was to thank them for, everything that I do to help out. Because the psychiatrist pointed out to her, maybe you should thank your child considering the fact that your mom never thanked you.
So yeah. that was like somebody caring about you.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Did your sister have responsibilities? I know she was younger, but...
There's a running joke in my family that when it came time to helping me with chores, which is what she was supposed to do, I would go to my sister and say, Lizzie, hey, you think you can run the vacuum cleaner tonight? Oh, no, I did that last Thursday. last Thursday was like 3 months ago, Lizzie. Like, you have not run the vacuum. No, I did it last Thursday. And she would just maintain this fiction of this last Thursday thing until I would just get exasperated.
And did anybody put pressure on her?
No.
I'm like furious. I want to, this is making me furious. Are you angry about this?
No, I'm...
It's, how can you not be angry? They fucking took advantage of you.
It is what it is.
Were you? But were you angry before?
A lot of the time, I was really kind of an angry teenager. My friends were doing things on the weekends. And that was the thing. I was the house frau. Monday through Thursday, Friday, mom would come in and she would do her bit, and then we'd order pizza. And it was like, wait, so I cook four meals, and you can't? But okay.
Did you ever complain?
Yeah, all the time. I complained, but nobody listened. It was just quit your bitching.
Really?
Yeah, shut up.
I'm mad. Yeah. So did you fight about it, or you just did it and you kept your mouth shut?
I just took my lumps because I was biding my time. That was always the thing.
You said your parents didn't expect you to go to college, which I find sad.
Right.
But that's a whole other story. But how did you wind up leaving the house?
So we ended up, my parents ended up when I was 17 moving to a small rural town. So as if the small town, that we were already in, where you sneeze and the DJ and the radio says, God bless you. We moved to a smaller town in a rural part of Ohio on a 16 acre farm. And when I already thought that I was shouldering too much, we took on a head of 30 sheep and overnight.
Cool. I love animals. You don't have to take care of them.
That's a huge job. I had to help take care of the flock. In addition to all the house chores, now I was doing farm chores. And
wow.
Yeah, so it's a wonder that I didn't have a nervous breakdown when I turned 18.
Did they sell the sheep, or was that an income producing?
It was really the whole purpose of having the sheep, and this is the ridiculous thing. So the whole purpose of having the sheep is that the sheep had originally, they were eventually going to be taken away after we bought the property. There was a period of about 30 days where the farmer was going to be selling these off, and, it was all our land. And then we were looking at the hillside that was part of a property, and my dad was like, that's kind of like a 70-degree slope. I don't think I'm going to take a riding mower on that. We're going to have to keep some of these sheep to keep this hillside
flat.
And so that's how we got into raising the sheep. It was an accidental.
We got lawnmower.
Yeah, we have lawnmowers, lawnmowers. Yeah.
So your dad, I picture somebody who's on the couch all day.
No,
did he do,
not at
no,
all.
Workaholic?
No, workaholic. Guy worked all the time, works all the time. He's retired and he just works and works and works.
And he wanted you to work all the time.
Oh, yes.
I don't like the way he treated you.
I inherited some of my father's ambition, and my father was always working. And that's the thing, is that my father was always doing something, always working. And that's kind of the philosophy of my father, is that you should always be busy. He's never said the phrase, idle hands are devil's whatever.
Right, but he might as well have.
Yeah.
So let's get into, I can see why responsibilities is part of your is on your chart here, on your psychological chart. But let's talk about like what happens today. So you shrink responsibility. How does that manifest itself?
So it manifests itself in assignments, class assignments sometimes.
Because you're working and going to school, but school's your main thing. You're studying theater. We know this.
I am. I have.
You want to be a voice artist, like for cartoons,
for radio, really anywhere mm-hmm. where my mm-hmm. voice fits. And
well, your voice
needed.
Fits well here.
Well, thank you.
He's got a good voice. I mean, you know, and he can do it, characters and stuff. Yeah. Somebody out there, you know, this guy could be great on your cartoon.
Yeah.
So anyway, but okay, so you're in school. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about, so tell me about what responsibilities are a problem for you.
So it's completing homework, studying, that sort of thing. Like it's kind of funny, like at my job, like I pretty much keep it together. Like there's...
Mm-hmm.
I don't, and the thing, that's what really makes it so frustrating. I don't like my job. I don't.
Mm-hmm.
I don't. And it's not the job so much. I like the customers. I like mm-hmm. my coworkers. But, you know, there have been some choices recently as far as leadership is concerned that just don't work. But that's neither here nor there.
Well, you're way too smart for the job you're doing. I mean, it sounds better than a lot of jobs you could have. But I mean, this is not your life story.
No, it's not your life's passion. There I do just fine,
school.
Like getting done what I need to get done.
But you're really responsible.
I'm responsible with it.
Yeah, this is starting to make sense.
Right. So, and then it is starting to make sense. Is now that I'm thinking about it, it's just like, so then school kind of takes the back seat to that. And that's part of the reason that I took the semester off at the beginning of the year is that I was supposed to be ramping things up at my job. I actually had a staff to work with. We don't have a staff. There was me and one other guy now, but I actually had a staff that mm-hmm. I was managing.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, one by one, they dropped off. And mm-hmm. So
you had some change over there and a job that, were you interested in the job at some point? I mean, even though it's not your life's passion.
I mean,
when you took a semester off from school to devote to your job?
Yes, because we were trying to get to a point where, you know, we were doing where we had steady work coming in, and that only happens when you have salespeople who are booking things. But it just, there was just kind of a breakdown, and then, you know, the busy season ended, and
so you were committed to your job. You made a personal sacrifice about your passion in order to help out at your job,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
So this is starting to seem obviously, mm-hmm. I don't know, maybe it's obvious now, but mm-hmm. it's starting to seem to me like it's exactly what was happening at home, where mm-hmm. you had to push aside all your own needs mm-hmm. because you didn't want to get yelled at by your dad.
Mm-hmm.
Why you don't want to get yelled at by your boss or mm-hmm. fired. There's responsibility at work.
Mm-hmm.
That isn't personal
mm-hmm.
in the sense that, like, you're not, you know, the thing that's interesting about the responsibility connection, I think, between the job you have mm-hmm. and your parents is that you can't really fail in the sense that if you just get the job done, like,
right.
what, you're shitty at cleaning, you didn't vacuum right?
Right, right.
Like, whereas your schoolwork has probably so much more emotional. It's probably so much more emotionally fraught for mm-hmm. you, is it?
Mm-hmm.
Like you want to do well.
Oh, like I want to do well, and I do, and it's true. But you know, I'm at that point sometimes where, you know, I'm putting things off. I'm waiting to do things like reading assignments. Like I'll wait until I'm on the train heading to the class, and I'm like cramming this 4 or 5 page article in before I go in there, and I really haven't digested it. And I know that because I know how
mm-hmm.
when I read something, I need that day where I just, it ruminates.
Mm-hmm.
And then I wake up and I have a new perspective of it just because I've had an opportunity to ruminate on what I read versus mm-hmm. when I'm on the train and I'm reading. And then I'm walking into the classroom, like literally holding the last page in my hand and reading the last lines before I take my seat. I mean, that's...
So there's some self-destruction going on
yeah.
here. And you know that.
And so it seems like I don't... I mean, I've not identified it as self-destruction. But,
well, see, I'm feeling, this is what I'm feeling. Mm-hmm. I'm feeling like, join the club. Your parents mm-hmm. did a number on your self-esteem. Mm-hmm. Like they really did not make your, what's important for you personally valuable.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering if there's part of you that has a hard time valuing what's important to you, particularly like when you're doing things that have, you know, for all of us that don't have like money attached to them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like if, or the consequences are all on you, like you'll get a bad grade mm-hmm. or you won't learn something you wanted to learn, mm-hmm. but it's not like it's you versus you.
Mm-hmm.
Is there something where you're not taking your own work, personal work seriously enough or?
Hmm.
What does Ori say to you?
Well, you know, and then this is one of those things that like Ori and I like really don't talk about these kinds of things. It's funny how like when I have my own like whatever issues that I'm having.
Mishigas.
I keep them to myself. Like I never talk about what's wrong.
Haven't talked to Ori about this?
No. I mean, it's one of those things where, I mean, he already knows that I put things off at the last
right.
minute.
Yeah.
But
he's,
you know, it's
he's
just,
no idiot.
He's no idiot.
But does he know that it bothers you?
That I put things off to the last minute? No, I don't think he realized, you know, to what, I mean, I'm sure he knows that it bothers me, but I don't know what, if he knows to just how, what degree it really does bother
mm-hmm.
me.
And why haven't you talked to him about it? Is it just, you don't think it's important or
you know,
it hasn't occurred to you?
I don't think it's something that I would really want to take to him just because he has his own things that he needs to work out too. And, you know, that's what professionals are for, I suppose. But, you know, I don't see those either. So I just deal with it.
Wow. Wow. So you've been handling, you feel, you, responsibility is a big, I think a big issue for you because mm-hmm. you feel responsible for everything that happens to you in a way. Like you mm-hmm. feel like not doing well in school or something or not doing what you're supposed to do mm-hmm. for yourself is your own problem.
Mm-hmm.
That no one else is responsible for that.
Mm-hmm. mm-hmm.
But what about support? Like, Ori's not responsible. No one's responsible. But mm-hmm. if you share it,
mm-hmm.
you know, Ori might be able to help encourage you or at least show some sympathy, empathy, help you look at it, just to put it out there. What's that about? You're beginning to look tense. That makes you tense.
No, I'm just my stomach's just bothering me a little. I'm fine.
Tension.
No, it's one of those things where it's just, I don't know. I internalize a lot. I keep a lot to myself.
Mm-hmm.
I've always kind of been that way. I mean, it's not that I have a problem with being open. It's not that I have a
no.
problem with being frank. It's just that, you know, when something's not right and, you know, it's no one else's fault but my own, I tend to not ask for help.
Mm-hmm.
As I feel that, you know, I made whatever mess that I've made. It's mine to deal with.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Is there any areas in school that you, I mean, are there examples of things where you feel like you have really followed through and gotten things done on time and?
I mean, classes that I'm taking right now. Oh, yeah. I mean, there's times and moments all the time where, you know, I am doing the things where I am getting the things done. It's just that, I don't know, sometimes there's just when, you know, responsibility comes to pass and needs to be done, like, it doesn't necessarily even have to be homework. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it can be, like, paying a bill, like a bill that I know that's due, and I will have the money. The money will be there in my account waiting to be paired with the bill.
Mm-hmm.
And I will wait until the midnight hour to part with that money, and I don't know why that is.
Mm. Well, I'm wondering if there's, this is what, I don't know. So I was feeling really angry at your family mm-hmm. for genuinely in my estimation from a non-professional viewpoint
mm-hmm.
that they were taking advantage of you.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if you've ever felt that anger or dealt with that issue, that you feel angry at them.
Well, and it's so hard when I hear you say that. I'm like, I realize that and that it can be seen that way, and I don't necessarily say that you're wrong, but
you just don't connect to that.
But I just don't connect to that because it's so intertwined in my upbringing, which is it was natural for us to have to help around the house. It was natural for us to have to be part of this. But you know, but then again, when I look back on those times and I see my other friends who are like, they're, you know, out having fun, they're going to parties.
Yeah.
And it's like, but this is also, this pairs up with the same thing too, where, you know, so many times I wanted to go somewhere. I wanted to go places with friends, and like invariably there was always some reason, some excuse, some other thing that I couldn't go because of one of those things. And it usually had to do with some responsibility that, oh, well, tomorrow we're cleaning the gutters. Oh, well, tomorrow we're clearing the brush in the back of the property. Like, and it is funny, if you really want to kick, my favorite chore is splitting wood.
Really? Oh, that's cool that you got to learn how to do that well.
Love to split logs.
Because you get to put out some of your aggression in splitting. So I'm wondering, I mean, we only have like 9 minutes here, so I don't think we're going to solve this lifelong, deeply ingrained issue. But I do think that there might be some value into looking at this sounds cheesy. This is how I do it after years of therapy. Like sometimes, like looking at that little child, the little boy, the small child, Eddie, who is no longer you. Mm-hmm. And feeling some anger and compassion for him just as a child. Mm. Like, you don't have to go like, man, that was fucked up. You don't have to be an asshole about it. That's what I'm saying. Mm. But in the meantime, I think, like, it's really cool that you're noticing it. And I think, could you see how it makes sense that you have, like, if you weren't capable of getting things done on time, like if you just didn't have the bandwidth or the mental capacity or the ability on, if you were lacking in some way, that'd be cool. That'd be fine. But it's not. And you're a really ambitious person, you say, right? So this has got to be killing you. You're not living up to your capabilities,
right.
But also the capabilities that you value, school and achieving things that you want to achieve, aren't necessarily your family's values. Is that right? Nothing wrong with that.
Oh yeah, I mean, then I feel that that's right. But the nice thing is, as far as, you know, my family back home is concerned, I mean, they do support me. I mean,
well,
they
that's
do.
Good.
They, I don't.
I'm glad to hear that.
I don't think they necessarily get everything that is me anymore, but they still support.
You know, this isn't a referendum on them at all, because they've obviously done you a hell of a lot of good. You know, you have a pretty good life, and you've moved to New York and you're making a lot happen. You've got a great partner. You're on the road. You know, you're passionate about some work that you're doing. You're supporting yourself. I mean, there's they've taught you what they've given you a good work ethic and how to be a decent human being. I mean, and you're obviously inherently very bright and, you know, all that stuff. So they did okay.
Yeah, they did all right. Yeah,
they did. And they love you very much. I get that. And you love them back.
Oh, yeah.
I get all that.
Absolutely.
So this is not a referendum on them whatsoever. This is not a referendum on anybody.
On anyone.
We're just having a conversation of people who now are from a different planet than that you're on. You were born on that planet, but you are now living on a completely different planet, and they can't or don't want to or have no reason to visit your planet.
Right. Yeah. Well,
so
all of that.
All of that.
Yeah.
So that, and that's fine. This is nothing against them. But what I do want to do is honor the real Ed, the real Edward that's in there. Like, we got to like really honor that guy who is really nothing at all except for like the decent values, that person that was brought up. And we have to make that Eddie the best Eddie it can be, and we're getting there, and we're aware of what the best Eddie is. So if you could just separate the planets a little bit and be a little more selfish. I think you need a little bit of selfishness.
Okay.
Where are you ever selfish?
Sometimes, but not very often.
What would Ori say?
I think he would probably agree with that. I think he would say that I can be selfish once in a while, but it's pretty rare. I'm usually pretty, I'm usually pretty giving. I'm usually thinking of others first. I'm usually putting others before me a lot.
And do you get taken advantage of?
At work,
yeah. I'm sure them a lot.
Yeah, I did, actually.
Yeah, so here's the thing. Your career is your child. Your voice animation, whatever you call it, voice artist career is your child. And you got to take care of that.
Yeah.
And that's number one.
Right.
That's number one above all else. No, none of this stupid work comes first. Okay. You know, Ori's laundry comes first. None of that.
How did you know about Ori's laundry?
Do you do Ori's laundry?
Oh, geez, you didn't. You just called my bluff. Oh, God.
Did
I? No, I did his laundry last week and forth. I normally don't do Ori's laundry. Please,
Ori's
out there.
Ori does his own laundry. I'm not worried about Ori taking advantage of you.
I just helped him out last
week. It's okay. You can help Ori with his laundry.
Thank you.
I'm just telling you that you're still young. Life moves quickly. Life moves quickly. And the responsibility you have is not just to you. It's to your passion, what you need to make, what you have to offer the world. And you're putting yourself second, and that's not good for anybody. That's not good for anybody. But me saying all this, we have 4 minutes left, isn't really going to, like, me saying this now, and you even hearing it, thinking about it, maybe hopefully we get the ball rolling. But what I think we need to help you with is cognitive therapy.
Okay.
So I don't really know exactly what to do, but what we do, I don't have it like a plan in mind.
Okay.
But we do need to think of tangible actions you can take that are just pure discipline.
Okay.
Do you think you could figure out like a schedule? Ori's good at this. Maybe ask Ori for help.
Just ask Ori for help. All right.
Here's a good plan. Ask Ori for help to help you with a schedule of when you, what, even just blocking out Ed times, Eddie only time, Eddie first time. So during that time, that means that's the time that you're going to take care of your schoolwork. You're going to like, there's a movie you want, whatever the fuck you want. And if somebody asks you to do something, you say no.
Okay.
This is Eddie's time. We need to train you and rewire you for Eddie time. What else do you like besides, you know, your work, your voice art? Is there anything else that you need time for that you wish you had time for?
It's been a while since you've even given that thought.
That's so sick. That's fucked up.
No.
Sorry.
That's okay.
We love you, Eddie.
Oh, I know you do. I'd love to see some theater. It's been so long since I've gone.
Well,
now
why isn't
show.
That? Well, okay. You got to get Ori to help you plan this out. Okay, because Ori's your partner, and I know if he was here, he would be like, "Yeah, I'm going to help you."
Oh, of course.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's just think about that for a minute. In the meantime, we've only got like a minute left. So I want to make sure that we give Ilan a big shout out here. Do you know Ilan Danziger?
I do not.
Yeah. He's on after, his show is on after this one.
All right.
Yeah. And he does this really great show. And I want to make sure that people hear about it and listen and stay tuned. It's called Lost and Rewound. And he's a really funny guy. He does like some stories. He has guests and he plays music. And Lost and Rewound is from when he was a kid and he was really into, he used to carry around a tape recorder in the mid-90s when he was in middle school. And he has like an audio time capsule of prepubescent life. So he's always playing mixtapes and stuff like that. So I hope people will stick around And thanks so much for coming in today. I hope I didn't upset you or
anything.
Not at
all. I've enjoyed myself.
No?
You're right.
Good.
It's a successful show. I've enjoyed myself.
I'm so happy to hear that. Well, thanks to all my friends out there. Give me a shout out at Twitter, Dr. Lisa Levy, SP. That's Dr. Lisa Levy, SP. Send me your thoughts. Ask to be on the show.